You found Wisconsin's local music authority. This is Mag Sync Radio. We are local music.
Last Cracked, they hit the streets of Madison on September 6, 1987, as memorialized in their epic song, Blood Brothers of the Big Black Bear, which we just heard.
Love it.
By 1989, the song was released on their debut, Sinister Funkhouse number 17, and by 1990, Last Cracked was recording at El Dorado Studios with superstar producer Dave Jordan, producing their critically acclaimed sophomore album, Burning Time, for Roadrunner Records. A live album, Burning House Live, was recorded at a reunion in 2002, and the band's latest release, The Uprising, was released in 2019. Then came the lockdowns, and the band has been on hiatus ever since. Until now, Last Cracked will be headlining the Rocker Jamboree at the Burr Oak in Madison on Sunday, May 4th. And here in the studio tonight is Paul Schluter, guitarist from Last Cracked. Paul, welcome to Mag Sync Radio.
Thanks, Rocker. It's good to be here.
You know, we're supposed to have your buddy, Singer Butto, in the studio, but it turns out...
He's just driving around the building, right?
Yeah, no,
that's what I was doing.
One of the bands that he's playing with at the Jamboree, Mindox, their practice kind of got pushed, and they're getting up to the deadline, so he had to remain and kind of practice with that band in order to be prepared for next Sunday. And so now... what does it mean, actually, to be a blood brother of the Big Black Bear?
That's just been such a long time thing. That's funny when you said September 6, 1987. Yeah. We were walking these streets in Madison, and I remember that night really well, and that's where that song came from. And it's been just this crazy, wild, wild journey with this band. And yet again, you know, something comes up like this jamboree that we're going to play, and we're all kind of brought back together because, like you said, during COVID, that was kind of, you know, we had just released our latest album after years and years and years. And so we haven't done a lot since then. Well, and this is kind of a thing to bring it back.
Yeah. My question, though, what does it mean to be a blood brother?
Yeah, he was trying to get out of the question.
Big Black Bear.
He was trying to get out of it.
I mean, you know, I guess I would qualify as one of those people who hung out at the Black Bear Bar, right?
And that took acid.
That was downtown Madison. And it was just all those people that hung out at the bar. It was really like Madison's metal bar at the time.
Oh, absolutely. It was a community. And we practiced nearby there. So we frequented there all the time. It was a rock and roll bar with a rock and roll jukebox, and we knew everybody there. The first time I saw our video on MTV, it was on the Black Bear's TV.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I remember the first time that I heard Blood Brothers of Black Bear, it was on that rock jukebox, because they did have the rock and roll jukebox of Madison. You know, Judas Priest and, you know, just metal bands. But then all of a sudden, they had a local band on there, which was kind of unheard of, really, at the time. Like a local band appearing on a jukebox where you could put a quarter in and play the song.
And a local band escaping, you know, the bubble of Madison, I guess.
Right. That was an amazing time. Well, take me back to 1987. Tell me about starting Last Crack in the Madison music scene.
Well, it was really interesting. We, Don Bakken, the other guitar player, and I had left a band that we were playing in. We wanted to write our own music. And we found Phil and Todd, who were a drummer and bass duo, and instantly clicked with those guys. And we tried out a bunch of different singers for over a year. And it's really funny. There was a music store here called Good and Loud Music.
Yes.
And that's where we found Phil and Todd. We had put up an ad and said, two guitar players looking for a bass player, drummer, and singer. And then about a year later, we saw Butto's ad for a vocalist looking for a band. And it was a very weird fit. He was totally coming from like this punk.
The Snot Rockets, right?
Yeah, right. This punk sort of thing. And but I think he recognized that we were like this really tight band, and we just made it work. And that's part of what makes it so unique is the, you know, it's not like we all were like really big in Metallica, and so we sounded like Metallica. We were a stew of all kinds of influences.
Right. I mean, it was pretty amazing how they came together, and that Black Bear crowd, you developed a huge loyal fan base. Tell us about, you know, how that fan base worked to kind of propel you guys past Madison. It was really kind of this hometown crowd that lifted you up.
Well, I think like metal, you know, which we sort of you know, we leaned a lot metal. Metal is a loyal, loyal crowd, especially when we went to Europe. I know I've always said, like, if the people in Europe, the fans there loved your first album, they'll buy your 13th crappy album just because they're loyal, you know? So kind of the same around here. I just came from a show. I was, I've kind of lost my voice there talking over the music, but, there's a bunch of East Side Madison people, the old crowd, lots of Last Crack people, and they're still fans, you know, 30 something years later, you know.
That's incredible. Now, Last Crack gets signed to Roadrunner Records, and you were all really young at that time, maybe some just out of high school, not too long. What did it feel like to kind of get that kind of recognition for your art, you know, being signed to a major record label?
It was absolutely amazing. I mean, ever since I was 7 years old and saw my dad play with his band, I dreamed of that. We all did. All of us as musicians, you dream of getting signed and getting lifted up and being on MTV and all that. And that all was actually happening. And I signed my record contract at age 19.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, I once was speaking with Randy, who was the producer for your first album. We'll talk about that in a second. But he looked at me and he said, you know, how did these guys at 19 years old, how did they know how to write this music? Because it was all, it was amazing from the demo tape. Now, your album, the debut album, Sinister Funkhouse number 17, was recorded at Prince's Paisley Park Studio in Minneapolis with late local legendary producer Randy Green. Tell us about working with Randy to produce your demo tape that got you signed and got you your first album.
So, very interesting. We used to practice in this storage unit for $50 a month, just outside of McFarland, outside of Madison.
Nice. That's cheap.
No heat, no air, just power.
And, that's all you need.
So that's where we first jammed with Butto. And shortly after, we decided, like, we want to record after we had a couple of songs. And we went and recorded with Randy. And Randy used to put this reverb over everything. I don't know, everybody that recorded with Randy, they used to call him Reverb Randy.
Yeah.
And it was magical. It kind of had this sound. And Monty at Roadrunner Records heard it and hated it at first, from what I've heard, and somehow listened to it again and loved it.
Wow.
And then they had put us with this guy, this producer in Minneapolis, and he changed our stuff all up, all weird, changed our song structures. And then they immediately fired this guy after the demo we did in the demo studio, Paisley. And they said, what about that guy that did your demo?
Yeah.
So we pulled him in and we recorded the album at Paisley Park.
Now, I've had the privilege of listening to that demo, and I'd have to say that the arrangements on the demo are almost the same as what's on the album.
They are. Like, Randy didn't mess with us. And
yeah.
I'm a producer too now. And I'm the type of producer, I think partially because of that experience with this other guy, I don't mess with band stuff.
Yeah.
I rarely do mess with their thing. If it's cool, I'm just not going to screw it up and change it to put my mark on it, you know?
That's really important. That's some wise knowledge there, some experience. Now let's see, this was a question for Butto, but we're going to give it to you. What's the process that you guys go through with writing those songs? Was it the music first, or, you know, did the riff come first, or did the word come first?
Music almost always.
Yes.
And, I was like a writing machine back then. I would literally flop my hands on the guitar and start writing parts. And I told myself to, like, if I wrote one part, I better write two more, because it was, you know, always hard to come up with something else.
Yeah.
So I would bring that stuff in at practice or just come up with it on the spot. And then it was a collective of everybody contributing. And even Butto as a vocalist might, you know, punch on his punching bag or write on the walls or whatever, but he'd maybe go like, wait, right there, go bop, 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 bop. And so some of the weirdest punctuations musically are actually come from him.
Yeah, well, he's a drummer too, right?
Yeah.
So that made a little difference. Well, for your sophomore album, Burning Time, you worked with another legendary producer nationally, Dave Jordan, who is famous for Alice in Chains and Kiss and just a plethora of other bands. The band sound goes from gritty local metal band to oral masterpiece. Even the songwriting is refined to a new level. Tell us about that evolution.
It was a huge maturing between the albums. We all lived in a house together in Minneapolis, and we were away from everybody in Madison. And we just would go downstairs and practice, and we had to live with each other. We, you know, had to tolerate each other. And I think that helped to speed up the process. Also, one of our guitar techs showed me some scales and showed Don some scales, and we knew nothing really. You know, wow. we were just winging it previous, you know, learning that stuff and learning just this little tidbit of like music theory really helped my writing a lot and changed everything.
Wow. Hard to believe. And Dave Jordan, he was just, he made the album sound like big time.
Yeah. He did create this great sound, kind of like Randy did with the reverb of our magical demo, yeah. You know? And we're also not very big fans of the sound of the album that we did at Paisley Park. Great experience. I mean, we sat there and watched Prince eat dinner and Sheila E. cook stir fry in the kitchen. And he was recording in the B studio and gave us the A studio.
Wow.
And then we flipped studios. And when we flipped studios, the album never sounded the same.
No.
Yeah. We just never got it back. It sounded amazing in A. We moved to B. And I don't know. I would love to get those master tapes and remix that album.
Wow. Last Crack is coming out of hiatus to perform a set at the Rocker Jamboree at the Burr Oak in Madison on Sunday, May 4th. It's a benefit for Mama Cares and yours truly, Rocker, for my medical expenses after suffering a heart attack on stage with my band Iron Plow. Now, you guys are pulling this together. You're playing with Last Crack. You're also playing with Magic 7. Tell us about, you know, kind of coming together and bringing all these people and friends and everything together for this great cause.
Well, speaking of friends, I'm very, very happy you're alive, my friend.
Oh, thank you.
You and I have,
yeah.
Since 1993, right?
We've been around the world together.
Yeah, we have. So, I'm very grateful that you're here to talk to me. And we're all friends. The Magic 7 guys, we haven't played with in years. And the Last Crack guys, it's been quite a few years. It's going to be a family reunion. And I hope maybe we'll continue on. It'll inspire us to do more.
That's what I was going to ask that question. So that's a great answer. Now, Paul, you have been praised by the likes of Dimebag Darrell for guitar playing. And now you play in a country band with your wife, Elizabeth Mary. Do you still get to pull off those crazy leads?
Yeah. You know, I enjoy being really tasteful, too. Mm-hmm. I leave the fast playing to my son now from Power Takeoff.
We had him in the studio last week.
That was great. I listened to that. But he's doing all those fast, crazy things that I used to do. And I just feel like I've matured and I want to write melodic leads. And when I have people in my studio, I push them towards writing melodic David Gilmour type of leads. And actually have some of that stuff on Burning Time too.
Yeah.
It's not all fast, crazy, you know.
Yeah, I remember when he said, you know, don't get rid of those squeals.
But Dimebag, when we met him in Texas, he was like, hey, man, keep doing those squawks. And it's like, that was so great. I miss him.
Yeah. And he specifically showed up to see Last Crack that night. I remember that was a great show. You know, now, Butto, I heard that he's playing drums for the Vanishing Kids. I was going to ask him about that, but that's pretty cool. He's out there jamming as well. Paul, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us on Max Inc. Radio tonight. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Always love being here.
Now, we're going to listen to one of the oral masterpieces from Burning Time, and it's called Mini Toboggan. And I mean, as far as I'm concerned, that features a world-class slide guitar solo in the end of that. That's really brilliant. But it's a song about Butto and his sister, right? Coming home to sled.
Yes.
Tell us about that song, because I mean, there's so much going on in the song. Like I was talking about your guitar playing. Tell us about the oral tapestry that Jordan was able to create with that song.
So a couple of things that come to mind with that are lasting. We used to call that song Chocolate Church.
What?
And it was, I want a religion I can gobble up. I remember we played it at OK's a couple times. And the lyrics were really not formed. Half of his lyrics were not formed when we went out to LA to go record with this huge producer. And Jordan was very cool about it. Had Butto pull out notebooks. And that song was originally in the studio called Jen and Todd's Midi Toboggan.
Wow.
But his brother and sister. And I didn't like that at all. There was, in hindsight, at 2020 now, I love it. But I didn't like it. I just didn't want it to be that.
Wow.
But Jordan loved it and nurtured that idea. And it came out to be what it is now. And it's perfect. The guitar playing is icy. It's exactly.
Oh, yeah.
It's
a tapestry.
Gives you the picture of that. And then one other thing about the solo, too. Our engineer was there and he said, "Hey, do you mind if I go step out for lunch? Here's how you could punch yourself in." And I'm in this million-dollar studio. It's Marvin Gaye's old studio.
Yeah.
And I was already nervous. I didn't know what I was going to do. And he was there, and I just felt intimidated. And when he left, I lit some incense in there, dimmed down the lights, and I felt like I was in my own million-dollar studio. And I would have never done slide. I was like trying all kinds of crazy stuff, pulled out the slide. And that's like one of the first takes.
Now, I've seen you play that song a lot. And I've seen you play it with a lighter. I've seen you play it with a beer bottle. I've seen people come out of the audience and hand him a lighter because, you know, you forgot to maybe grab one on the way
slide,
up, right?
Or Todd Winger knocked my glass slide off of the amp, you know, and it broke.
Wow. That is so awesome. Well, thanks so much again for coming in. Last Crack is playing the Rocker Jamboree coming up Sunday, May 4th at the Burr Oak here in Madison. And now let's listen to Mini Toboggan. This is off 1991's Burning Time on Roadrunner Records. You're listening to Max Inc. Radio. We are local music.
Oh, thank God.
with a miniature bargain. He plops to his belly, but in the snow, and he goes.
Brats, brandy, cow chips, and great local music. This is Max Inc. Radio. We are local music.